You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I am Mike McGivern alongside my co-host and special guest. He's wearing two hats today, Dr. Brian McCarty. Merry Christmas, sir.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Yeah, I'm actually, I need a hat because it's cold out there.
It's, you know what? It's cold. Well, it should be.
It's not that bad, but you know.
Not for this time of year.
This is not yet the San Diego of the future.
It is not. Are you done with all your Christmas shopping?
Not so much.
Attaboy.
But I'm getting there. We're going to celebrate a couple days early. We've got some things going on.
Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting. We're had a very, very busy last couple of weeks. And, you know, before we get started, I want to give a little bit of a shout out to my crew and all the help we get at Mosh. I was there, it seemed like many, many hours the last few weeks. It was many, many hours. And I'll tell you what, the nursing and the techs and the anesthesiologists and the whole group there just makes that experience so fantastic for me, of course, as the physician, but for our patients as well. And I had a lot of compliments yesterday. I know we did 11 surgeries yesterday. And, you know, the people really appreciate being treated properly and having the focus be on them, having competent people look after them. And, boy, thank you so much, everyone over there, for taking such good care of our patients.
Do you know, I'm really happy you said that, because sometimes when you live in that bubble, you don't really understand it. But from where I'm at, for the people that had listened to the show, that have emailed me or called me, or people I work with that have said, look, I listened to the show, I want to go see, I need to see, I have to see, the difference of their experience when they go to Mosh is different than when they go elsewhere. And sometimes when you're in the middle of that, you don't know it. So I'm really glad that you said that.
Well, I'll give you an example. You know, in the middle of surgery, if we need something, we barely have to ask for it, and it's there. I mean, the people are just so responsive. And they're responsive because they feel like they're part of a big mission to make sure they're providing the best care. And, you know, interestingly enough, the Center for Medicaid Services, which is the big government organization that kind of oversees everything, just rated Mosh as one of the top 10 hospitals in patient satisfaction in the United States.
Wow.
So just to give you a sense.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's Sheila Gansmer who runs it, and Cassie who runs the actual surgical part. But boy, they all just do such a fantastic job. So I just want to say thank you to all of them. And thank you for the patients for putting their trust in us. And I think things are really going beautifully there. So,
hey, for most of the show today, our topic is going to be youth basketball common injuries. And this time of year, as basketball has gone here for 4, 5, 6 weeks, injuries start to happen. And we want to talk a little bit about that. If you have questions that you want answered, you can tweet us during the show, hashtag SportsMedRadio, MED, SportsMedRadio, and I can get Dr. Brian McCarty to answer those. Before we go into that, let's talk a little bit of Big Packer game. Let's talk about some of the injuries, and I want to ask you some questions about Peyton Manning as well. But Ty Montgomery still out. Sam Shields had a concussion. That play was, when they did that in slow motion, that was rough.
It was. You know, honestly, it could have been a number of different things. The way he landed, it looked like maybe his shoulder was injured. Obviously, concussion's not a good injury to have. And boy, are they going to miss him. He is such a huge part of it's like losing your number one receiver. You lose your number one corner and everybody has to switch. So, you know, hopefully the secondary, they've certainly had a lot of experience filling holes. And hopefully, you know, Sam will be feeling better and be able to get back safely next week. You know, we spent last week's show, if you didn't hear it, you should check it out on the podcast on mymosh.com or on the radio station here. All about concussions and the controversy therein. And it was really interesting. We had Aaron O'Toole on, who's a concussion specialist with us in the Concussion Care Network. So check that out. And I'm sure a lot of people will be seeing the movie Concussion, which is coming out shortly.
I got a ton of reaction from the show we did last week.
Did you?
Yeah, okay. a ton of mostly people saying, wow, I didn't know That was really interesting. I learned a lot. A couple of my football coaching buddies saying, boy, what you're scaring me now. You know, well, you know what? There's information there that we need to just be mindful of.
Yeah, you know, we talked a lot about that last week. If you get information that's well collected, you need to pay attention to it. You know, sometimes we like to just kind of put blinders on and because we don't like it. But, you know, sometimes you just have to pay attention to it. So we'll see how that story unfolds. I think the most important thing that we talked about last week is all the efforts being made to make the game safer for our athletes, like in soccer, getting rid of headers, changing rules in football to make it safer, I think is the biggest contribution that we've made so far. So now we're going to see where it goes and take it from there.
I agree. Hey, let's get back, if we can, to the Packer injury report. We talked about Ty Montgomery out, Sam Shields out. Questionable, Davante Adams, Mike Daniels, TJ Lang, and Corey Linsley.
Yeah, you know, I do a review every week before the show to make sure that I'm kind of up to date on what's going on. And that whole offensive line is toast. I mean,
they're toast.
Every one of them is hurt, and a lot of them are just soldiering through it. So, boy, it's going to be rough that way. But Ty Montgomery, I think, is probably not going to play. I assume he had a high ankle sprain. I think they've been trying to rehab him through it. It just doesn't seem to be working. He's been out forever.
He's listed as out. So
he's out now. And if he's out now, it seems unlikely that he's going to make it back. So the Davante Adams thing is very concerning because he wasn't getting a whole lot of separation before. And to have a foot injury means the likelihood of him getting a lot of separation now seems to be a little low.
Correct.
So we'll see. I mean, we'll see how they all shake out. The good news is that Brian Bulaga is now probable and Bakhtiari's probable. So they've got some guys coming back. Clay's still playing. Perry's back, which is huge. So they've got a lot of upside, too. So we'll see.
The Josh Sitton is probable with a back injury. As an offensive lineman, That's difficult. That back injury can flare up at any time.
Well, he said he's been dealing with that all season, and he knows that he will be throughout the rest of the season. So I heard him interviewed about it, and he basically said, yeah, my back hurts, it's going to hurt, and I'm just going to play anyway.
Hey, can we, before we get to a break, talk about Peyton Manning?
And
you know, he was back on the practice field for a couple of days, and then he was held out of practice on Friday because soreness in his left foot. He will miss his fifth consecutive game on Sunday when the Broncos go to Heinz Field and play Pittsburgh. And he is recovering from a tear in the plantar
fascia.
Fascia, thank you, near his left heel. Just didn't want to mess that up. Plantar fascia near his left heel.
Yeah, so this is a lot of people out there listening may have had at some point plantar fasciitis. What it is there's a very thick, strong, fibrous band that connects your heel to the rest of your foot, underneath your foot. And sometimes it will be injured near its insertion into the heel. And in the worst case scenario, really, you get a partial tear of that ligament. And I've had a collegiate tennis player that we treated recently with this was really struggling with it. It's a very common problem in all people, but especially if you get it as an athlete. One of my friends who was a Navy pilot, was a triathlete, did all this stuff. He had this, and it kept him out for 2 years. He couldn't run on this foot. So it can be a really disabling problem. Now, interestingly, there are some newer treatments for this that I'm assuming that they probably tried for Peyton Manning, but I don't know that for sure. One of them is it's actually called AmnioFix. It's taken from a placental tissue and an amniotic tissue. So it doesn't have anything to do with a fetus or anything like that, but rather the tissue surrounding that. And that can be utilized to stimulate a healing response. And we used it a couple of times. It was actually very effective. There are other injections called platelet-rich plasma injections that we talk about quite frequently. These are distillates from your own tissue. So you take some blood from the patient, you spin it down, and the platelet layer is packed full of growth factors, and that can be injected into this area as well for the same reason, to stimulate a healing response. Now, just to circle back a little bit, if you think about how this thing tears, it doesn't tear all the way through, so there's still a lot of tension on it. Because there's tension on it, it's always being strained. Every step you take, it's strained. Every time he pushes off, it's strained. So it actually hurts a lot. And when you do these injections, what you're trying to do is stimulate a healing response so that it will finally get strong enough to handle it.
You know, it's interesting, and we have to get to a break, but when I started doing some research for our segment and our topic today, youth basketball common injuries, one of the top four is heel pain. Is it
Seaver's disease?
Seaver's disease.
Yeah, it's a very, very different problem.
We haven't talked about heel problems in the past on the show. And it was interesting, as I'm looking up Peyton Manning, the injury, and then this, it is different, but it's the heel, it's hard to get that to feel better.
It is, yeah, and we can talk a little bit more about that, but we're gonna focus on basketball injuries a little bit more today, but
correct.
But this whole area is something that there are a whole bunch of different things that can cause this pain. The plantar fascial pain that he's dealing with, the fact that he had a setback. I read an editorial in the sports page in the Mile High Times or something. They said, oh, maybe this is good news. It's not good news. Okay. It's terrible news for
sure.
Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
So because they said, oh, well, because it's been going on for 6 months, that means it's been healing for 6 months. You know, that's why we're doing the show, right?
Yes.
Because if we had a patient who was rehabbing, doing better, kind of like Ty Montgomery, and then has a setback and can't practice,
that's not good news.
Yeah,
no doubt. Guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, I'll continue a conversation with my co-host and special guest this week. He's Dr. Brian McCarty. Go to mymosh.com for more information. Again, if you got any questions that you want answered on today's show, hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll get Dr. Brian McCarty to answer those. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Teenage girl, much too young, unprepared for what's to come. A baby changes everything.
It's Faith Hill. It's a beautiful Christmas song. I'm picking the music today. So far, so good. Thumbs up all around. I see that, boys.
Can you tell?
Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show.
Great sports song.
Hey, it's Christmas time. And you know what? That baby changed everything.
You know what? In the spirit of love and Christmas, way to go, Mike.
Thank you,
nice
Brian.
Nice job. Nice
Thank
job.
Thank you, Dr. Brian. I appreciate that. He is my soon-to-be my ex-co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. You can check out his information, mymosh.com. Again, you can hashtag SportsMedRadio if you want to tweet us any questions that I can get answered from Dr. McCarty, other than on music, because I'm way ahead of the game with him on that one. Hey, let's talk a little youth basketball if we can. You know, this time of year and getting back into coaching, when I talk youth basketball, I'm talking from grade school through high school. And the game's changed a little bit. I was out 4 or 5 years, and it's quicker and stronger, and kids are playing more. And as I started doing some research for today's show, it's amazing. If you asked me what are the four most common injuries that players experience, two of them I would not have guessed. One is the heel pain that we had talked about. Ankle sprains, I would have guessed, ACL tears, and concussions in basketball, which is a little surprising to me. Surprising to you as well?
Yeah, it is. And I'll tell you, just parenthetically, the list is a little bit incomplete. The two things that are forgotten, we're talking about heel pain, ankle sprains, ACL tear, and concussion, as listed as the four most common. The most common is hand injuries in basketball. So, you know, we a lot of times those are kind of forgotten about, but all the finger injuries and sprains and all this kind of stuff that happens.
Right.
So that's the most common one. But nonetheless, I think they just kind of left that off the list.
Do you think they left it off because maybe they're not reported, or not somebody doesn't go see a doctor because of it? If it's they tape it or they try to jimmy it back into place, or
it certainly could be that that's the case. But I can tell you that in basketball, that's way more common than concussion, for example. So it's always a little bit of a danger. And this is no criticism of the stuff that you'd collected, because it's from the CDC. It's just always a danger. And I'll just throw this out there.
Sure.
The data you collect has to be good enough to get a conclusion from it. And so if the data is incomplete, maybe they didn't include hand injuries, for example, then you won't catch that. But as someone who sees basketball injuries all the time, I know that hand injuries are the number one. But let's get back to this whole thing about
Please.
What are the more common injuries that need treatment.
Yes.
Right. So what you brought up about this Sievers disease, okay, is the same problem that occurs in what's called Osgood-Schlatter disease. And a lot of people have heard of this, and it sounds, I think, like some sort of terminal cancer or something, some horrible thing. But it's really, these are named after the doctors who discovered them, which is maybe not the best thing. But what there really are what are called growth plate traction injuries, or what we call apophysitis, okay? And we have to have these big words to justify our many years of studying. But the apophysis is different than what's called the epiphysis. The epiphysis is the end of a joint growth plate. This is where a tendon inserts into the bone, and it grows there too, okay? And so at Osgood-Schlatter's, which happens at the knee, the tendon, the patellar tendon from your kneecap, attaches into the tibia bone. And that tendon is like the rope that pulls your knee straight. So when you straighten your knee and you feel down there and you feel where it attaches, that's called the tibial tubercle. And that's where Osgood-Schlatter's occurs. And a lot of kids, a lot of people out there listening probably have had that or know people who've had it. You see the bump there and it hurt and they stop growing and it goes away.
Right.
Sievers disease is the exact same thing at the heel. Okay, so where the Achilles tendon attaches to your heel bone, so if you feel the very back of your heel and you feel where that tendon, your Achilles, attaches into the bone, that's called the calcaneal apophysis, and that's where Sievers disease occurs. Now, Sievers disease, again, is not nearly as common as Osgood-Schlatter's, okay, if you took the, you know, all comers. But nonetheless, it's the same process, and it's often overlooked. So people say, oh, geez, you know, he's just hurting in his heel. Well, I mean, it can be really disabling.
Right. And, very painful.
Very painful. And it's the exact same situation that you have with Osgood-Schlatter's, which means the treatments are the same. So if you can play and you're not limping and it's just sore and it gets better within 24 hours, you just carry on doing your thing. Okay. You can keep playing through that. Take a little ibuprofen if you need it. It's fine. If it gets worse where you're starting to limp around, then you need a wedge in your shoe to kind of take some of the tension off of that area, do some Achilles stretching to help to stretch the Achilles and go from there. If you're limping around and it's been 2 or 3 days, now you got to get into a boot to protect it, let it rest, let it heal. Remember, these are little fractures that occur as the bone gets pulled apart. So you got to let them heal. And it's no pun intended, by the way.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah, thank you. Once it heals up, then you can get back into activities again.
Is it ice and rest?
Not so much elevation, but ice and rest. And then common sense. Anytime an athlete's limping because of pain, they should be out. Okay?
Right.
Unless you know exactly what it is, it's a bruise in the thigh or something. You got to be careful with that. We're going to talk about that later. You have this as a topic later about fatigue and injury risk, right?
Right.
So when they're limping around, as a coach or as a parent, you need to think about getting them out of there. Okay, and some of these kids, as you know, are playing 3-4 games on a weekend.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's a lot. You'd never ask a college or NBA player to do that, but we ask the kids to do that all the time.
All the time, and at times it makes no sense. When you're talking about the summertime, they're not practicing as much as you do at the high school time, where you're practicing every day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's tournaments coming up for the holidays where teams are playing back-to-back, and they're playing at night and then the next afternoon. And that's difficult for these kids, especially with these 18-minute halves now.
It really is. And, you know, we did it in tennis all the time. You know, we'd have these multiple-day tournaments. You'd play 2 matches a day. And, you know, it was fine unless you had a really, really long match. You're playing 3 hours at a time. You know, but nonetheless, this particular problem, Sievers disease or Osgood-Schlatter's, these are specifically unique to kids who are about to finish growing. It happens in the 2 to 3 years, maybe 4, before they finish growing. When they're done growing, you can't get this problem anymore, okay? Because now that bone is all one piece of bone, and it won't do this anymore.
And there's once it's done, once you're done growing, it's done.
Correct.
So you're looking from 12 to 16?
Yeah, most of them
maybe?
Are 12 to 16, correct. Yeah. And, you know, we see it all the time. And most of the time, once you know what it is, you can manage it very effectively. So surgery is basically never needed for this problem. One of the things I always emphasize to parents is to remember kids aren't big, little adults, right? They're not little adults. They're different because their growth plates are open. So you have to change the way you do it. The other thing I'll tell you is that you got to remember the bones grow and then the tendons and muscles lengthen. So when you see these kids, they're tight as can be. And if your son or daughter has grown 3, 4, 6 inches, you know, in the last 12 months, and they're getting this kind of thing, well, that's why. It's not right. Because they're not doing what they're supposed to do.
Hey, as I get older, I think I get shorter. That does, it's not coming back, right? No. I can't get this as...
You max out at 25, Mike, and then it's all downhill from there.
That's great. Hey, before we get to a break, one thing that I've never been able to do with you on this show, because we've always had other guests in, I like to spend just a couple of minutes on our special guest background and where they grew up and where they went to school. And we've never done that with you, Dr. Brian.
Because I don't have a background.
You're Milwaukee. You went to Milwaukee Marquette. We can pass that if we can. He's a Hilltopper through and through. But all kidding aside, grew up, went to Milwaukee Marquette, and then went on to Madison, correct?
That's true. Yeah, I grew up in Heartland. We moved up here when I was about 7, and my father was chairman of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin for almost 20 years. And so I grew up with that background, which he and my mother really inspired in me a love of learning and a love of teaching, and that's kind of how I ended up here. At Marquette, I had great influences, really tremendous influences. Jim Carney, who I still know really well, you know, really helped to broaden our horizons and demand a lot out of us. Guys like Mr. Kapinski and all these guys, a lot of them, you know, recently left, and some of them have, you know, moved on a long time ago. But boy, the love of being precise, the love of doing the right thing and always following through, really, it was drummed into me both through my family, my parents, but also at Marquette. So I thank them very much for that.
And the idea of being competitive academically at Marquette was really important.
Yeah, I mean, Marquette's an interesting environment. And look, there are a lot of great schools. I work with schools all over the city are tremendous.
Sure.
And it's not unique to them. But it was a matter of being competitive in the right way.
Correct.
Being competitive but supportive of the other people. And you know, the thing they really drove home to me that I've taken very seriously is the responsibility that we bear for our community and for our world, and making sure we're doing the right things and giving back. So, you know, when we got back, we started fundraisers right away for St. Ben's, and we hosted an event every year for them. And now we have a foundation through Greater Milwaukee that we love because we can give to Hunger Task Force and Rescue Mission and all these things. That for me is simply a reflection of everything I was taught when I was a young man.
Right.
And things I just believe are important. They're not based on any sort of dogma. They're just based on feeling like that's the right thing to do. And a lot of that came through that.
Well, that's awesome. I appreciate you sharing that with us because, look, I was a Mesmer guy, coached at Dominican. Have some fun talking smack.
So your view of Marquette's a little different.
It's a little different. It's a little different. You know, in some sports, we whooped them pretty good, but, you know, other ones, it didn't go so well.
Well.
But understand that I and this is from the outside looking in, I believe the people that I've talked to, if they go to that school for the right reason and open their mind and their spirit to learning and to learning different ways and then becoming as one, there's no better alumni base than Marquette's. And there are guys that go there that they go there because they have to and they don't want to.
Yep.
And they're not going to come out the same way that guys that go in and embrace that whole environment.
You know, I love that you brought that up because I think in some ways that's true and in other ways it's totally not true. Because I think Marquette is a process. By the time you get to your junior, senior year, you realize why you went there in the first place. And that's when people start recognizing that they're learning more than just school. And it's something that I think the best schools, regardless of where they are doing, which is they're teaching their children, their students, I should say, not just the academics, but also how they're supposed to be good citizens and what they can contribute. How can they do it? And today, with the internet, with the access, with the ability to do things bigger than yourself, the opportunity for young people, and I see it in my sons and my daughter right now, the opportunity for them is better than it's ever been to do great things for other people. And they're all doing it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And they went to Brookfield Academy. So they didn't get that from Marquette. They got that from their environment, their parents, and their own moral compass. It's really cool to see.
He's Dr. Brian McCarty. Thank you for doing that. I know that's not something that you ever want me to do a lot of, and I just appreciate you you being open to having that conversation with me. On the other side of the break, we'll continue. We are talking, our topic today is youth basketball, common injuries, and we'll continue on that on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. That is Sugarland. That's right. I see Dr. Brian just smiling.
Mike McGivern is in charge of the music this week.
And you know what? You're welcome. Everybody else, you're welcome, except the two knuckleheads I'm sitting here with.
It's
everybody
not Jingle Bell Rock. It's not, you know. I mean, there. You know, some of the more mainstream ones, it's got to be.
You mean like sports, like pump up kind of.
Well, no,
music.
It's Christmas time. I know we're going with a Christmas theme, and it's just.
You know what? Way to go, Mike.
Thank you.
Way to throw it out there.
Thank you. You know what? I met with, I didn't do Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Yeah,
all right? Yeah, we're not going that way. Welcome right. back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM.
The
Fan. Trying to keep the reason for the season is what I'm trying. This is Mike McGivern, my co-host and special guest this week, Dr. Brian McCarty. For more information on Dr. Brian, go to mymosh.com. You can also tweet us any questions that you have, hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we will get those questions answered for you. Hey, to start this segment, wanted to talk a little bit about, there was a comment that I read, and I highlighted it, and it says over half of all injuries occur in the second half of games, highlighting the need for strength and endurance during training to prevent fatigue. And that as a coach for a long time, I started thinking about different injuries that I've seen during games. And I never thought of that, but this is right. There's a lot more injuries that I see in the second half of games as kids get tired and get fatigued.
Well, that's a really important point. I mean, this is why we always talk about the importance of conditioning. And, as a coach, the importance of coaching. You have to know your players and know when they're getting fatigued. I'll tell you some really, really interesting stuff about this. So I'm glad you brought this up.
Thanks.
So just recently, the NBA started tracking all of their players with radio frequency devices that are in the jerseys. They can actually see exactly where each player is on the court all the time.
Wow.
They can measure the velocity of the player. They can measure, how many feet they've traveled. They can measure everything, including, by the way, whether you've totally biffed your defensive assignment or not, which is kind of a side effect of this. But for the trainers, and I actually heard the trainer from the Los Angeles Lakers, who's been doing it for 30-some years, he was on a different radio show talking about this issue and what they're using this data for. And I found it really interesting. So what they're doing is they're showing that they can see whether a player is in what they call a green zone, a yellow zone, or a red zone. So they can test based on the mass of the player, based on the number of minutes that they're expected to go, how they're performing, and whether or not they're able to hit their normal velocities or not. If they hit the green zone, they're totally fine. They just keep on going, right? If they're in the yellow zone, they keep an eye out for them and see and make sure that they're not falling off. Because when they fall off is when they see a spike in injury.
Wow.
So this correlates directly to your point about this, but it's being done now in a very measured scientific way, which is really interesting. When they hit the red zone, they actually pull them and shorten their practice minutes, and they work on conditioning. So what else is involved with this? Well, it turns out that the angle of their attack, in other words, the way their posture is, changes. So they get much more vertical and they stop using their core. So how we always talk about the core, right? And what is the core and what does that mean? Well, it's everything from the glutes in your buttock into the pelvis, your abdomen back, and then all the way up into your shoulders and shoulder blades. Well, they found that as people hit this yellow and red zone area, they start losing control of that part of their body, and they start changing their posture. Now, this makes sense if you think about it.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So if you're running, right, and you're running around playing basketball, you're getting fatigued, what happens? You start leaning forward. You start going on the knees, right? These are right. things coaches look for.
Sure.
And, you know, even when I coached basketball for a little while, we look for that, right? When the guy's got his hands on his knees and you're like, oh, yep. the guy's
grabbing
bagged,
his shorts,
you know?
Yep.
Right? And then you gotta pull him and get him a couple minutes and get him back in. Well, they're doing this, but they're doing it and watching what their posture looks like. And what they see is that the injury spike goes way up in these situations. And so what they're doing is using technology and these little devices to measure all of this happening on the floor, and then they can go process it post-game so that they can see kind of where, how many minutes a guy should be going, what intensity he's going at. If they're running an up-tempo offense, maybe they've got to take the big guy down a notch because he can't run that much. You know, it's all becoming really systematized. It's really interesting.
Do you think that can detect if a player has a heart or not?
Well, that's
there are some players that have no heart.
I think that is such an interesting point because, like, you look at maybe I'd like to see the data from the Bucks versus the Lakers game, right?
Right,
where they just got blown out. And you think, okay, are these guys even trying? You know, and I think that's a real. I thought the same thing right away, but you know, they probably can tell whether the guy can burst his velocity, but he's not.
and whether they have interest at times is, you know.
Well, this is, again, this is one of those monitoring things. It's kind of interesting.
Going along that same path, I used to believe, and I still do, that there are certain players that if I get them past a fatigue point, that I lose them the rest of the game. And there are other guys that were better athletes that it seemed to me that I could get them to that point, get them a 1 minute or 2 minute break, a little water, get them back, and they would be fine. There are other players that if I push them too far the first half, that they had nothing left the second half.
Well, what you're experiencing is what's called, you know, conditioning and response, right? So some guys will be able to recover faster than others. It has to do with the composition of their muscle fiber. And I mean, we can get into that, but, you know, the difference between fast twitch and slow twitch muscle fibers has to do with whether you're good at sprinting or whether you're good at distance, right? So if you really wanted to get scientific, you could take a young athlete and you could biopsy the muscle. This has been done, and you can see what kind of composition they have. So I can tell you, Usain Bolt, if you biopsied his muscle, is going to be almost all fast twitch muscle. That's what he is. Now, you try to get him running marathons, he'd probably be okay at it, but he wouldn't be like anywhere near what these Kenyan guys are, and those guys are going to have almost all slow twitch muscle fiber. So you could customize to some degree the sport and the position based upon that information. And
that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And
what do you think? What would mine be, do you think?
I think yours would mostly be
slower?
Twitching muscle fiber at this stage.
Oh, it's twitching, all right.
hey. Guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, I want to talk about injury prevention and get some get some ideas from you as far as I know. Go ahead.
Oh, I also want to throw this tease out. We're going to talk a little bit about should the Panthers go for the undefeated season from a sports injury perspective.
Ooh, we will talk about that as well on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
They told me, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum, a newborn king to see, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Can't believe I got a smile from Dr.
Our
Brian McCartney and a song choice.
Hey, you know what? You can't go wrong with the drummer boy.
And right. And
right?
Bing and right? You can't. How can you go wrong with that, David Bowie, right? Here you go.
Huh? Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Hey, I want to thank Brandon Wells. Brandon Wells sent us a tweet. He said he's an athletic trainer. Love the show. Thank you for educating the public on athletic injuries and the treatment of. So, Brandon, thanks a lot for listening.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. We appreciate the feedback. And believe me, you guys are the ones that are doing most of the educating. You know, every day athletic trainers work with our athletes and educate the athletes and parents about the injuries and how to prevent them. And what a service they do. I tell you, if you're a parent or a coach, you know, we have Coach from Arrowhead Basketball here. He's coming up next. You know how important they are and what a great service they do. So thanks, Brandon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hey, before we get into the Carolina Panthers real quick, information that I looked at before the show on basketball injury prevention. It said injuries occur 3.5 times more often in games than during practice. And it talks a lot about the most common cause of injury is contact with another player. And there's contact during practice as well, but for some reason, injuries occur 3.5 times more often, at least in this guy's study, in games more than practice. And your thought on that?
Well, we ain't talking about practice.
We ain't talking about practice.
We talk about the game. That's what I say.
Alan,
there's a difference in intensity between practice and a game. There's also friendly fire in practice. It's different than the game. You know, people get a little feisty in the game. You're playing against the other team, and
yep.
And the intensity is a lot higher, and guys get a lot more tired. I mean, let's face it, the effort level's high at practice, but it's not quite the same. You're working on sets and things like that, and even the scrimmages aren't, you know, they're not even designed to be quite at the same exact level of intensity. So it's not that surprising, but 3.7 times higher during a game is pretty significant.
It is.
So, you know, again, it gets back to this whole thing. You know, practice like you play, in the sense of conditioning. You know, but make sure that you do all the right things. If you're getting tired, you feel that, you know, coming on, you know, that's the time to get subbed out, get into a fresh guy in there, and then you'll be fresh and ready to go again next time.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about something that keeps coming up in some of the information that I was looking at, and that is the idea of bracing, ankles, taping. And a couple of weeks ago, we had that conversation where you said, look,
we're very sure. That's a mischaracterization. I'm sorry. But no, you should not be bracing normal ankles is the truth. Okay. So normal ankles don't require bracing. And unfortunately, you transfer energy to the knee because the ankle is meant to accommodate uneven surfaces. So yes, you may get some ankle sprains, but you're not going to get as many knee injuries. That's been definitively shown. So if you have an ankle injury where you have an unstable ankle or you've had recurrent sprains, that's a different thing. Then you have an unstable
but
ankle.
Healthy ankles
should be left alone.
Boy, because I'm coaching now at Green Day Martin Lutheran, and Coach Wallersheim, who I think is, you know, and against our next guest, I think Wallersheim is the best coach I've ever coached with, but he believes highly in braces.
Well, that's terrific. But that doesn't follow the data. So the severity of the knee injury is far higher than the ankle injury. And so, again, you know, you want to keep your guys from getting hurt, right? Most coaches aren't aware of this fact.
Right.
And so they go with the conventional wisdom, you know, and instead of looking at the information. So the information clearly states that normal ankles should be left alone.
Interesting. Well,
look at the NBA. How many guys do you see wearing an ankle brace in the NBA?
We'll have that conversation. Hey, we've only got a couple minutes left. Your thought on the Carolina Panthers?
All right, we're bringing in a crew here. So everybody voiced their opinion. Should they go for the undefeated season or not?
I think yes.
I say yeah, because how many chances are you going to have to go undefeated, especially, no offense, if you're the Panthers?
All right, so what this comes down to, and the reason I wanted to bring it up, is the importance of psychology in sports, right? So from a psychological standpoint, you listen to Jeff Saturday and the Indianapolis Colts, they bagged out, right? And they lost, and it hurt them psychologically, and he's still mad about it to this day. And I'll give you the flip side. This is what people often don't do. Think about it. It's the 16th game, right? They're 15-0. They're up by a touchdown. They're running out the clock, and the running back fumbles, and Cam Newton does an Andy Dalton.
Okay.
And breaks his thumb.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Now how are you feeling?
Now I'm not feeling well, but you know what? If you're talking about sports psychology, there's something about keeping that edge.
I know. I agree completely. Now, what if they're 14-1 and it's the last game of the season? Now you're going to go? You're going to keep men when
now
they're
I'm
up by a
touchdown?
No,
I'm going to rest them.
Yeah,
okay.
They're going to rest it for sure.
You know what's interesting? Years ago, there was a young man at Tosa East, and he went on and played at Louisville. He's still playing overseas, making a boatload of money. He had a chance to set a school scoring record in a meaningless game at the end of the year. And they were ranked, I think, number one or two in the state, had a chance to win the state championship. And they left him in. And he got hurt, and he couldn't play in the state. And I went out and really got after Coach doing that, who's still a little mad at me for doing that. But I ran into, when we were at the Clatchy Center, this young man's father. And he said, I remember that. And I thank the coach for allowing him to do that. I don't look back at that and think anything other than he had a chance to set that school record, and I want him to set it.
Well, these are the difficult quandaries that coaches face. You know, this is the difficult, you know, coach is an executive, right? You got to make a decision. You know, I'm an executive in the operating room. We got to make decisions. It's hard. You know, sometimes you have to make decisions, and there's not an easy answer. This is one of them. So it'll be very interesting to see how they play this out. I mean, this guy, Cam Newton, is a physical freak. And, you know, he does a lot of physical things. So it'll be very interesting to see how they play that.
Hey, this music doesn't
fit. I hope they go for it, because I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I do too. This music doesn't really fit with
me. Nah, this is music. Turn it up. This is music. Now we're talking.
Hey, no, because a baby changes
Merry
everything.
Christmas.
That's the music I'm looking for. Dr. Brian, this has been really good for me, so thank you. To have you as my co-host each and every week is great, but to have you also as a special guest for 1 week, like we did this week, we get some a little more insight into what makes you tick. I really appreciate that. Have a Merry Christmas.
And to you as well. And happy holidays to everyone out there. I hope you have a great season. Everybody stay safe, and let us know what's going on so we can answer your questions.
You got it. This has been the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.